Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio always works that on Friday night. West West, y'all.
I don't expect much, but I expected more from you, this a bit much. I mean this shit sucks, I meant you wanted my 2 cents and got like $6, and you still switched up? It's hard to trust now, it's got me treating good women like a bus down. And they be along for the ride like a bus round. I'm saving it all for the rhymes, it's a crutch now. What now? You'd rather see me 6 feet under, but I'm Stevie Wonder. You let them other niggas run, yeah, I'm bringing the thunder. I remember the day we met, baby, leave me the number. Now you so fucking full of shit, you should sleep with a plunger.
And we stuck in our way, and I'ma love you always, and I'ma love you always. And we can suck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby. Stuck in our way, and I'ma love you always, and I'ma love you always. And we can suck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby. And I'ma still be like, that's my baby.
You always was a bad bitch, and I ain't mad with you. Maybe one day you Marty McFly and you get the picture. Fuck a glass, let me get the picture.
Can we leave the bottle? Appreciate it.
No hands, straight to the bottom, that's word of mouth, huh? No bed, making you holler right on the couch, huh? You ain't used to fucking with niggas that ain't gon' bounce, huh? But when I wake up in the morning and you out, huh?
I've been the problem, okay, I know. I can be toxic, I ain't alone. But I'm holding out for this ray of hope.
And if you say goodbye, then it's adios.
And we stuck in our way. And I'ma love you always. And I'ma love you always. And we can suck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby. Stuck in our way, and I'ma love you always, and I'ma love you always. And we can suck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby. And I'ma still be like, that's my baby.
Uh-huh.
like revolving doors. We going back and forth just like a game of tug of war. We yell so loud, can't even hear what we fighting for. I gave you all of me, but your ass is still wanting more. I gave you love, gave you trust, gave you butt, but that shit ain't that enough. Somehow it just won't enough. So now you out here riding in the streets, huh? Trying to fire you ass a fire, little freak, huh? But you know that shorty is down to ride. If I catch you with a bitch, then you know it's homicide, yeah, yeah. Cause that's my baby, yeah.
Yeah.
You drive me crazy, yeah.
And we stuck in our ways, and I'ma love you always, and I'ma love you always. And we can suck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby. Stuck in our ways, and I'ma love you always, and I'ma love you always. And we can tuck it all away, and we can fuck it all away, but I'ma still be like, that's my baby.
I'm tryna go to Japan, I'm tryna do it for all of my fans. Bitch, I'm the man, I'm tryna get all this shit on demand. This is a brand,
this is a
say
brand.
My name when you see a nigga, say my name like you know
say
it.
My name like you know
one
it.
One time for the real niggas, middle finger to the court. Shawty, I ain't tryna deal with you, I ain't got time for the noise.
Nah,
shawty, I ain't tryna deal with you, I ain't got time for the noise.
Woo, woo, woo.
Smoking 93,
1993, smoking 93.
What it is, this is Off the Cuff Radio, the first episode of the new year on a Friday night. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and we are now tuned in for a special episode lined up, and this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Core Financial, Jesse Boutiques. I got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building.
What it do, what it do. Y'all are now tuned into the freshest frequency this Friday night. OTC up in the building. Shout out to our co-host, a lot of fan man, Lady Chinchilla, so Illa. It is I, the co-pilot, T-Max, with your first flight pilot class captain of all things stupendous and incredible, King Eric. And yes, we are here, we are here, we are here. Yes.
Yes, sir, man. First thing first, we want to thank everybody for supporting us throughout this journey, all the people that we met in the midst of this journey that's been there for the ride, helping us get guests, promoting the show. Y'all part of the family, y'all part of the team. We thank you, and we show y'all so much gratitude. We just definitely going to keep it rocking for 2022.
Definitely. So we're going to keep going. King, tell everybody who we got tonight.
Man, this brother right here, very talented dude, man, from the South Carolina. Straight up pivotal lyricist. He has his own funny and unique style. And you know what we do with Off the Cuff Radio? We champion for the underdog. We champion for the underground because that's what drives this culture. Nothing against the people that have a higher following, but sometimes the most talented are just on the come up and don't have as much of a following. But this guy right here, I guarantee you, he's going to be major in the coming months and maybe this year. And we want to be the first to jump online before he does. So without further ado, let's all introduce for the first episode of Friday Night on Off the Cuff Radio for 2022. I'm the Fat Boy, y'all.
Yep.
What's up, y'all? Thank y'all for having me on. I'm so excited for the new year, for the first interview of the new year, to be on here for the first time. It's going to be a big year first. I'm looking forward to it. I want to thank y'all for having me, for real.
Man, look, the player from the Palmetto State, man, we're grateful. Thank you for coming on with us. Thank you.
No problem. I just want to say, because I got a rep. I'm from North Carolina, so I got to rep NC, but I love South Carolina. You know what I mean? I got plenty of love, but I got to rep my own team, NC.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Tar Heel or Blue Devil? Tar Heel or Blue Devil?
Tar Heel. Tar Heel over here. We
it's going to be a good show then.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's going to be a tremendous show. Yes, the real true blue of the skies. Yes, all hills, Tar Heel Nation. Yes, yes.
I hope I don't catch flack for that later on, but it's all right. It's all right.
Yeah, them dude fans will survive it. They dealt with worse.
Yeah,
they going through it anyway. They'll be all right.
Yeah. We know Krzyzewski's retiring this year, but come on, dude. Y'all going to be back. You know, we just got to, hey. So, yeah, man. So, I mean, we're going to get right to it. I mean, Fat Boy, this is an honor. Tell us a little about yourself, how you started, and, you know, on the journey and from where you started to how you ended up here with us.
Yeah, so it's been a journey, you know what I mean? I've been writing music and recording music since I was a kid, started writing when I was 10, started recording when I was 15. Started performing when I was 16, you know, doing open mics and things like that. So just to kind of flash forward, the number one thing for me has always been learning. This whole music experience has been a huge learning experience from start to finish. I mean, you know, in the beginning, learning how to basic stuff like how to write bars and, you know, finding producers to get beats. all the way up until now, where, you know, I'm starting to put on like my own little shows, and I'm starting to, you know, try to do more in-house stuff, do more recording in-house, do more, you know, more on our photo shoots in-house, stuff like that, artwork, graphic design, that kind of thing. So it's just been, I mean, stepping stone after stepping stone and just learning new skills, meeting new people, doing some networking, and you know, just trying to, I really want to, I'm not necessarily out to be rich and famous. I just want to be well off, and I want to do it my way and really just enjoy making the music and you know, bring the people in that will also enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's the most important, man. The humility you show, the passion. You come from a great pedigree in terms of North Carolina, of course. You know, little brother come from there, you know. Artists, for those that really know the underground, I don't know if y'all remember Rain from years ago. Of course, he's from there. I mean, you know, Rhapsody, you know, so the Carolinas have, you know, I mean, it's definitely made its mark in the game in terms of the music industry. Who are your influences coming up in terms of who inspired you to write, and this is what you knew you wanted to do for your life?
Hey, hold on. Let me wait quick.
Okay.
Hey, you on, bro? Hold on 1 second. I'm going to have him call back.
Okay.
Yeah, call back up, man. But yeah, man, the North Carolina scene is, I'm going to definitely build with him more about that because we have the talent. It's just a matter of just having the direction on where we're going to go.
Definitely. King, you're a journalist as well as a North Carolina native. Where do you see it in terms of what's going on in the music scene there, where it is for a lot of artists, you know, in terms of trying to get that push, getting the exposure, and ultimately, you know, getting, you know, noticed out of that reach?
I don't know what happened there, man. I had a little phone issue myself. But I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, here he is right back on right now.
Okay, perfect. We're back on.
We had a little technical issue.
On.
Yeah, you back on, bro.
Okay, yeah, that was my fault. I connect my phone to one of my Bluetooth devices. Too much technology. Sorry about that. But
It's all good. But who inspired you to write coming up in terms of what and you knew this is what you wanted to do?
Okay. So initially, the first person that made me kind of want to get into hip hop was the Notorious B.I.G. And for me, it wasn't even necessarily like I did enjoy the music. Let's not get that mixed up. But for me, it was more so the representation. So before that, you know, a lot of the cats that I saw were, you know, LL Cool J or like Treads from Naughty by Nature. You know what I mean? Cats that were kind of, you buff, handsome, you know what I mean? You got the classic, you know, kind of celebrity good look kind of. And seeing Biggie come out, it was like, oh, like, real people can do this. You know what I mean? Like, you can, like, you know, he had the line, black and ugly as ever. And,
yeah,
hard to
never black and ugly as
right.
ever. However, I say Coogee sound to the socks, rings and watch field with us.
Right.
Yeah.
Spitting that fly.
You know what I mean? So he came. Say again, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was spitting that ism.
Right. So when I seen that, I was like, okay, you don't have to be LL Cool J. You know what I mean? Or even Heavy D. Like, Heavy D was a big dude, but, you know, he was, boy, Heavy D was smooth. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
you
know, it was kind of,
yeah.
Right. So it was like, that was the first time for me, you know, in hip hop and really music up to that point, because it was, you know, it was a very young age anyway, that I saw somebody that was like, you know, oh, you can, You don't have to be tall, dark, and handsome. And you know what I mean? You can be you and do it your way and do it for who you are. So Biggie was really the first one. Now, as far as, like, the lyrics, and I catch hate and I catch love when I say this. But honestly, the lyrics, Eminem was a big influence when it came down to the lyricism. Yeah, you know. And it's either or. It's either or. Like, when I say it, people are either like, oh, Eminem, or they're like, yes, Eminem is a legend. You know what I mean? So, and there's really no in between, so I'm always kind of prepared for whatever. But, yeah, I mean, he just, from the first time I heard My Name Is even, this is, I hadn't even heard any, like, in his underground stuff. From the first time I heard My Name Is, it was just different. You know, the lyrics was just back-to-back and the metaphors and the rhymes, and it was just like, yo, I need to step my pen game up.
One thing about it with him, and, you know, it's inevitable when you get the white presence in hip-hop, even though the white presence in terms of hip-hop, going back to the Beastie Boys, you know, going back to the 80s, you know, I mean, even if people may feel how they feel about him, Vanilla Ice, you know, I mean, you had Everlast, you know, you had a lot of people, Terry B, for those that really, really are going, you know, deep in that hip-hop history, you know, she had a song called Murder, She Wrote back in the day. You know, there's always been that. Eminem was really the first rapper, I think, that from, I think, a lot of white people who did not feel like, because it's one thing to be white in hip-hop. It's another thing to have an unparalleled skill and an uncanny ability of rhyme acumen. So Eminem was not a token in the game. And for white people who really, really appreciate the culture, he spoke on a level that they could relate to in terms of things that they had struggled with and dealt with. You know, while on the other side of the black side, we were looking at them like, this dude's a rhyme animal, you know, and he really set it in stone in terms of, you know, really, really, really becoming a legend and not being a guy who was who was convicted of cultural appropriation. Eminem is as real as they come in terms of being authentic as an artist and as an individual. I can't say enough great things about him for the achievements that he has accomplished in the game, no matter what anybody is saying.
Cats be on the day.
Yeah.
For sure.
Even if it don't make sense, they gonna blab it out.
Yeah. And, you know, you get that a lot too. I mean, and I'm not gonna sit here as an Eminem fan. I am not gonna sit here and act like I have not heard a single song from him where it didn't make any sense and it was just a string of words that sounded good together. Yeah, he's got some, you know, I admit that. You know what I mean? But I don't know. It's from, especially for me early on with this first couple projects, you know, it was really like, okay, this is lyricism, you know what I mean? This isn't just like flashing the money. And for me, a lot of the times, what kind of made me flock to artists, because one of my favorite artists of all time, top five, is Weird Al Yankovic. People really look at me weird when I say that, but I like artists that are different.
Weird Al is a genius.
Weird Al, I swear to God, Weird Al is a genius. I don't care what nobody says. You're right, I agree.
He's still making money off that.
Yeah,
man. He's starting up another tour, I think, just this year, or he started last year. I mean, I seen. And, I mean, he's just totally different. There's nobody else in the world past the present that's like Weird Al, you know, doing what he do. And for me, a lot of the times, that's what makes an artist. You know what I mean? Even if, like of course, I like his music, too. But when I find out the backstory and, like going back to Eminem, you know, like, more so than the lyrical ability, I respect the grind where he, you know, would go to the open mics and he would go to the rap battles and he would, you know, he was homeless, but he was still chasing the dream. Like, stuff like that is really what resonates with me even more so than the image or even the lyric. So,
yeah,
I like
uniqueness.
You know.
Yeah, and I mean, we look at guys like Weird Al when he did Eat It, of course, when he did his parody of Nirvana. Of course, who can forget that movie, UHF, which also, before the Seinfeld fame, was a young Michael Richards in that as well. Weird Al, in terms of music history, one thing I can say about him, he was never afraid to be himself. If Fearless had a face, it's Weird Al. Because Al was unconventional, he was strange, he was eccentric, he was weird, but he was always confident in his craft. And people have to understand, in terms of his level of genius and parody, there's nobody who can do what he does. He pretty much, you could say in terms of the modern day parody of pop culture, there's nobody that can do what he does. Nobody can touch him in terms of that.
And I love that. I try to, and that's what I try to portray, you know, with my whole, with my music and art and everything. Just be yourself. Like one of my biggest phrases is, keep doing you. Somebody gonna feel it. You know what I mean? And it might not be 10,000 people worldwide that love you. You know what I mean? But the people that are supposed to, and the people that are engaged, and the people that have come to you of their own willpower, you know what I mean? Those are the most important people in the world in your story. You know what I mean? So do you, and let the people that enjoy you come. Everybody don't like Eminem. Everybody don't like Biggie Smalls. You know what I mean? Everybody don't like Weird Al. But that didn't stop them from coming and doing it their way and making their kind of music. And that's really... be yourself.
you know, if there's one artist, and King knows where I'm going with this, there's another artist, God rest his soul, who is just one of the most, this dude's imagination, to base his whole rap persona off of a supervillain, the late, great MF Doom. Oh, my
MF
God.
Doom.
I am a huge. Doom is just... I mean, Doom's style was just unbelievably just eccentric. It was, if you really knew pop culture with some of the stuff he said, it was like he literally, what was it on Dead Man High? He said, I hold the mic like niggas hold their girl tight, but I ain't about to mind myself the Acura Pearl White. I'm like, this dude is, and of course, you know, when he did the video Rhyme Stone Cowboy, you know, and then the songs like Hoe Cakes, and I mean, dude, and then of course, with 7S the Terror, the joint, he did a bomb toss. I mean, Doom was just on a whole nother level. I really wish, and people after his passing got more to listen to him, but I'm like, I tell anybody, do yourself a favor and listen to an MF Doom album. Listen to Mad Villainy, listen to Operation Doomsday, listen to Born Like This. Listen, I'm still mad at him and Ghostface because they never got that full-length project album out that they were talking about doing. They did some songs about it, but they never got... Yeah, but
That probably came from Marvel, man, because you know they probably wanted a big bag up front for that. If they was going to do something that crazy, Marvel probably was going to pocket.
Yeah, Iron Man and MF Doom. I mean, you know,
just put
them
in the movie and just keep it moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely would have got copyright. You know, they would have definitely wanted a bag.
look, for those that don't know, and it got settled a few years ago, because there was a situation when Ghostface dropped Supreme Clientele, and of course he sampled some of the stuff from the Iron Man cartoon. So there was a copyright claim levied. It got to the point where at one point people thought that the album was actually going to get pulled. It never did, obviously. But it was out there enough to where people did fear that ultimately cooler heads prevailed and the negotiations came through, and they worked it out. But when you look at pop culture of hip-hop with comic books, when you look at everything, because hip-hop is its own culture that came from the street, but it also is influenced by so many things. Yourself as an artist, what influences you in your day-to-day in terms of creating music and just life in general from things you see?
For me, a lot of the times it starts with a mood. So, like, there are some days where I'm in the mood. Like, my most recent freestyle that I just released is called Bad Dreams. And it's more like a low-key, like a horror movie on wax or like a thriller on wax. And I was just, I don't know, when I was writing it, I was just in kind of... No, it's not based off any specific movie or anything, but it's just dark, gritty, you know what I mean? The beat is real spooky. I mean, it's shout out to the chef for the instrumental too. But it's, you know, it's just a darker kind of song. And that's just how I was feeling when I was writing it at the time, you know, and I don't even think anything specifically grim was going on at the time, but just that day when I first started writing it, it was like waking up sweating some bullets, a bit bullet, you know what I mean? And it's just gritty, more so than like 1993 when you were playing. And when I wrote that, I actually had just gotten my recording set up back at home. And I was, you know, recording some different tracks and had got some beats. Shout out Mr. Dice for that instrumental. And, you know, just writing some stuff. And I went in the studio and I was feeling real good and I was feeling confident. I had got my setup back so I could get some more work done at home. And you know what I mean? And that's what came out in the song. It was more of a bop, you know what I mean? More energetic. So for me, really, every time it starts with a mood, how I'm feeling at that moment when I pick up the pen, and, you know, it goes from there.
Yeah. And it's wild because anything can inspire you in terms of just how you're feeling. In terms of outside of hip-hop, what do you find? What are your interests? Because everybody, you know, we got a phrase in show business about being on. But there's also a time when you have your downtime, you know, when you're having that time to yourself. What are the things that keep you grounded and pretty much keeps you plugged into reality in terms of the simple pleasures of life?
Oh, for sure. And the number one answer is my son. You know, I'm a full-time single dad, so he's with me. I mean, he's been to the studio. He's been to interviews. But even outside of all of that, you know, I like, you know, just going, like, we went to, before COVID, we went to go see the Jurassic World show at the Greensboro Coliseum. And, you know, little stuff like that means the world to me. You know what I mean? More than that's really what keeps your feet on the ground and keeps you moving forward, stuff like that. Because, you know, when people aren't listening to the song or liking the pose or whatever the case may or may not be, you can always log off and go, you know, go to the park with my son, you know what I mean? but past that, interest that I have, you know, just as me as an adult, I like to draw. I like all kinds of different creative aspects. I like to draw. I'm just starting to get into digital art and just starting to kind of dip my toe into animation. Just trying to learn that because drawing came before hip hop actually, and so I really have dived back into it. In the recent few years, I've started enjoying more of like the production behind the scenes as far as like putting on shows. Like I have a online show that I'm putting together called Jam that's coming in March, and this will actually be the fourth or fifth installment that I've done since 2020. And I started to find that I enjoy doing that. You know, I started looking at YouTube videos, for example, about set design and lighting and that kind of thing. So I mean, to be honest, hip hop kind of was the start, and it was kind of the only for the longest, but then it really helped me branch off into a lot of different talent. I mean, I bought a tattoo gun. COVID was also a big catalyst, because once COVID hit, you know, you kind of had to make up for the venues being closed, so you can't go out and network and perform and meet people face-to-face and have shows, and, you know. And once COVID hit, it was like I was one of those people that really started digesting new information and was like, hey, I've always wanted to do this. Let me buy a tattoo gun. You know what I mean? and just kind of see what skills that I have that I enjoy doing outside of music, just personally, just in my spare time, and seeing if I could incorporate it into the music, or maybe I could do something else with it. Or so, you know, I love it. I love the travel. That's another one. I just started really getting into travel in like 2019, and I haven't gone like overseas or nothing yet, but I'm trying to get passport ready. I miss the airport right now. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a big wide world out there. You know, we would implore anybody, don't be in a box that confines you to corners when you can be out in a wide open space and see the universe, you know, on Earth. And there is no greater gratification than to travel the globe. You as a single father, obviously you're laying down the foundation for the next generation with your son. How important is it to you as a father and then as a black man to be that positive role model for him and not get caught up in a lot of the trappings of celebrity and sometimes dangerous behaviors that some artists engage in the industry?
That's a phenomenal question. Yeah. Well, so first of all, my son is still pretty young. He's not really into celebrity-dom like that. But even past that, I mean, it's really just, first of all, the importance, to answer the question about the importance of it, I was raised by my dad. And he kind of always made it clear that, you know, no matter what happens, be there for your kids. Whatever happens with your relationship, whatever happens with your job, you know what I mean? Be there for. And he was the prime example of that. Like, he definitely practiced what he preached, because when nobody else was there, a lot of the times I did have my dad there, you know, to take me to, you know, the band concert in middle school, or the, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. And that meant the world to me growing up. And so that's kind of the model that I go off of. But then past that, especially in the world that we live in today, like you said, with the celebrities, with being a black dad and everything going on with the racial justice and everything, it can sometimes be a little daunting. This is my only child, so I'm just as new at being a dad as he is at being a son. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, so I do low-key worry about later on when he's 16, 17, that he can go off by himself with his friends. Because right now he's kind of still under my wing, to where, you know, he can't go but so far and do but so much without supervision anyway. So I do low-key worry about that. But I feel like, especially, you know, seeing my dad and learning from my dad, I realized that I picked up a lot more. He ever told me, you know, anything that he taught me, anything that he showed me, I picked that up, but then I also watched what he did, you know. So he didn't necessarily say, make sure you get up every morning and go to work, for example. But I saw him every day get up and go to work. So now that, you know, that I'm a father and I'm on my own and I got my son, and I realize that he's seeing those things. So I never told him, you know, go into music, or I've never told him to, you know, invest in yourself or whatever. I've never said those things. But I do hope that maybe he'll see when I'm doing the radio interview, like on Off the Cuff Radio right now, he's in the other room. So maybe he's listening against the door or something like that, and I don't realize it, and he's picking up little jewels that I'm saying here. So I definitely recognize the importance. I definitely recognize the pitfalls that are to come. But I really feel like it starts with the roots, the grounding. You know what I mean? Your head can go as far off into space as you want it to, but if your feet are firmly on the ground and you know which way you're going, you know who you are as a person, you know what you're capable of, you know what I mean? You're good to go. You can rise above a lot of the nonsense.
Yeah, and that's so important because when you're looking at the situation and what's going on, you know, King and myself are older. We came up in a time where everything was not virtual. It was hands-on, whether you were in the street or whether you were just playing out. It was really about interaction. It was about really having a real tangible experience with life itself. Obviously, with the social media phenomenon of the past 10 years, 15 years, we're seeing a change in the paradigm of social thought in terms of interactions and approach, because now everybody has gotten into this, which I think is dangerous, and there needs to be an intervention, like a pimp named Slickback was giving, you know, Tom and Boondock, you know, with Tom Dubois, because what's happened now is you're seeing a lot of young people that who are trying to emulate celebrity culture that a lot of times is exaggerated and not even a real representation, and then really getting suicidal, you know, when they feel like they're not, you know, as they say, you know, they feel like their life isn't lit to certain standards. And our thing is, you are not living somebody else's life. You are living your own. And don't measure your existence by somebody else's excellence or the masquerade of it. You know, at the end of the day, we're all people. And they go home to a situation just like you go home to one. But conversely speaking,
you don't
want to
mimic anybody else's life now.
Exactly, yeah.
You got to mark your own journey.
Yeah.
And as an art, as an artist, like I got a little bit of both. Like, I'm really proud to say I got a nice healthy bit, you know, because I'm a 90s kid. So I definitely grew up when there was TV, of course, there was video games, but at some point, once you got tired of playing the game, once you got, you know, tired of sitting in the house watching TV, you did go out and you hung out with your friends, and, you know, once you got old enough, y'all hop in the car and take a road trip to go see some girls or something, like, you know what I'm saying, something like that. Get out, interact with people face to face. But then I've also gotten a lot of the virtual where, you know, a lot of stuff, music goes digital, especially as an artist, music goes digital, and then you got YouTube and everything. And so, you know, it's real easy to get into that, because I was into that for a long time. Like, yeah, I got to do Drake numbers in order for my music to be relevant or valid. You know what I mean? And it's real, real easy. So I understand exactly what you're saying, where that's a huge pitfall. And I really feel like I'm just getting to the point now where it's like, you know what I was saying before about the tribe, just do what you do, you know what I mean? And the people that are supposed to rock with it are going to rock with it. And the people that aren't, you can't make them, you can't force them, you can't wish them to come to your side. You just got to work with who you have and show them love.
Yep. And, that's the most, the best fans are your organic, because they grow with your development. You know, they see you from your nascent to when you become seasoned, to when you become experienced, and when you become, you know, fully vetted. It's like what we've done with this show. This is King's Baby. You know, I'm so proud to be part of this, you know, and I'm so proud of what we have put together over the years in terms of the development we've come in. We've grown our base exponentially through real interactions and organic growth. When you see how music is marketed today in hip-hop, Fats, because you are a 90s baby just like we're 80. So you saw how the promotion, how the marketing, even with the video shows, it helped, you know, further, you know, the culture. How do you compare that era of we growing up watching Rap City, Video Music Box, on TV Raps, to where now it's become YouTube and Twitter, you know, and IG?
So, of course, it's definitely been an evolution. But, so I'm thinking, if you had asked me this a year ago, my answer would have been totally different. But today, I feel like it's not as different now as it was then, as everybody thinks it is. The technology is different. The way that we digest and acquire music is different. But it's still the music, and it's still the music business. Meaning, and I've come to find, so I grew up in, well, I started in the era where you could burn a stack of CDs, go out in front of the corner store, and, you know, sell those CDs and make some money.
Right.
It's pretty much the same thing, except CDs are no longer a thing, so you don't have the physical, you know, manufacturing part of it as much. But still, you know, getting people to check out the music. But I've also come to realize that people still in this era prefer a certain level of directness. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, everybody has the streaming services and the apps and everything, but a lot of people still appreciate when you pass them a flyer, or if you sell them a USB drive instead of a CD, they still want something that they can touch and hold. They still want to see you face to face. They still want to, you know, they it's still a certain level of physicality that's required. And so I think a lot of people feel like, oh, it's all digital. Like, all you got to do is get on SoundCloud. And yeah, that's true. You can, you know what I mean? But I still feel like at some level, you're going to have to meet somebody face to face. You're going to have to put a poster up on a phone pole. You're going to have, you know what I mean? There's still a level of tangibility that people appreciate. So in that sense, I feel like it's not so different as it was back in the day. It's just the mediums are different.
That it is. And when we look at it from that level, because I think anything about building fans is that you go out and you meet people, you talk to them. A lot of times, and one thing about it, we have no issue with social media. Social media is how we do this show. It's how we have met great people like yourself and so many others.
Right.
So social media has been great for us. But we also understood a certain level of depth and conscience in how we carry ourselves as not only journalists, but as Black men, setting a standard for journalism by Black creatives. We're always cognizant of this. And one thing about it is that in terms of being curators of the culture, we find it of the utmost imperative to talk to people and to make a positive representation in terms of our brand and respecting other people's brand, and then giving them an outlet to, you know, come on our show and really express themselves. I think a lot of times people think because of social media, it's an expedited process of celebrity. And it gets to the point where people will do things in a misguided attempt for celebrity that at the end it turns into a calamity, because it becomes a tragic comedy of just non-funny fuckery. People have to understand this. Going viral on certain things is not good if it's stupid. And a lot of people need to learn that.
And the sad thing is a lot of people have learned it. So now they're just doing whatever's, you know, whatever they feel like is going to get the views. And now they doing the stupid stuff that you know, like you were describing. So it's definitely a slippery slope there.
Well, I think a lot of times people think cutting edge is about breaking the mold, but breaking the mold means you have set a trend that is to be followed, that is emulated, that becomes innovative. A dude like New Age Jerk Boy years ago wearing a dress in a video, which was just wearing a wedding dress and putting a gun in his mouth like he was sucking a dick, is to me like, that is just no. I'm
he
so glad that dude. Exactly, exactly. Where's he at? Nowhere.
Yeah, people gotta stop with the notion that, oh, he getting attention though. That don't mean anything. He's not gaining anything. I mean, I guess people will probably look at it and say that attention is the new currency, but the wrong type of attention ain't gonna bring currency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's definitely true.
Fonte from Little Brother and, of course, the Foreign Exchange, one of the greatest all-around talents ever in the history of hip-hop in terms of singing and rapping, he made a great statement one time, and he said you want to make music that you can listen to. You want to make music in your 20s that you can listen to in your 30s and 40s, and you don't feel ashamed of it. And I think that is so true in terms of how you want your legacy to be defined. Do you want to be defined by dignity or by stupidity? And I think some artists out here really need to make that decision in terms of how they want to represent themselves. Because at the end of the day, you know, we see a lot of artists out here. I'm going to go there. We look at artists like Soulja Boy, who 16 years ago, as fast as that has come, from 2006 when he first dropped his album, and he had a worldwide phenomenon with his dance. But what he had an abundance of in entertainment value, from my estimation, he lacked in talent sustainability in terms of something that was really going to last beyond that era of that snap rap era. This is not a slight or disrespect to the flap, you know, to the snap rap era. This is not five fingers to the face of those who did it. You know, this is simply where hip hop was at that time. And there were so many artists who were part of that, him included. But the fact is that when you look at it, you have to look at how your longevity goes. And Soulja Boy has not been able to duplicate that success over the past few years, and some of the stuff he's done has really basically screamed for attention that in his mind, he still thinks that he's that guy from 2006. And we're looking at him like, dude, you're not that guy from 2006. Hip-hop has changed, you know? And when you listen to some, and it's not just him, because we don't want to make it look like we're pushing him out just because he's an easy target. But you have so many artists from certain eras that they don't transition well. And because of that, they end up getting phased out. It's so much faster now with how music is being put out because of social media. Back in the day, you could get in a studio, let alone get a video crew together to shoot a video for the song you were doing. I mean, you had some resources. Modern technology now, modern technology now has enabled more efficient and enabled for a more efficient fashion in terms of doing it yourself, which is great. Because it gives artists a chance to get stuff out there now that they might have not been able to. But the thing is that for some people, they think that that's the fast way to it in terms. But I'm like, no, you got to make sure your music is lasting beyond that in terms of if people remember you from songs you did 5-10 years ago and they remember it fondly in terms of it is a true representation of their nostalgia that influenced them and helped them in their coming of age years. as opposed to something that is a relic of that time that does not age well. If I can articulate it like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sure. I mean, some music is timeless. That's all it is to it. Some music is timeless. And actually, when you really think about it, all music is timeless because in this day and age, because, you know, before there was more like lost media where, you know, people, the record might be destroyed or the CD might be, you know, something like that. But now in the digital age, and of course, we can always lose files and things like that. But, I mean, mm-hmm. once it goes up on the Internet, unless something happens to the Internet, you know, it's up there. So if you release a song, I mean, and there's songs, I'm going to be straight transparent. There's songs that I could go back to right now that I posted when I was probably 16. And I wouldn't dare go back to them links right now because I know I'm not going to enjoy that music because I know at the time I wasn't making, you know, I was making whatever I thought would have been on the, you know, top 40 or 102 jams or whatever the case may be. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
But, you know, that's called growth. And the one thing about it is that you stuck with it and you become a better artist for it. Once again, I'm not trying to put him out on Front Street. This is only, I use this disclaimer because this is just for journalistic purposes on off the cuff. We are not going to harpoon somebody like Ahab, you know, with Hunter Moby Dick. We are not going to, our objective on this show is not to embarrass or humiliate. It is to give clarity and context. This was years ago.
Yes.
From a Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a four-star football recruit named Jay Harris, who had a scholarship to Michigan State University. He decides he wants to put out a video, basically, of him smoking weed, and it's a typical hood fare of a rap video, except he's in the suburbs. A whole bunch of people jumping around, a very low-budget trap beat, and somebody rapping who obviously did not dedicate his time to the craft. So Michigan State sees a video. Obviously, he's smoking weed. This goes back like 10 years ago in the past. So they pull his scholarship that he says that he wants to become a rapper. Now, mind you, the time the boy is 18 years old. And he got caught up in a hoopla of what it meant to what he thought rap life was. And I was reading this story. I remember reading it vividly years ago. And I was like, you're giving up a college scholarship because you want to rap for something that really you haven't even practiced at? Because a lot of these rappers who really get like Nas, Nas started rapping in earnest when he was around, I believe, 13, 14 years old. You know, he was around. King, how old was he when he did Back to the Grill Again? Well, how old was he when he did Main Source's Live at the Barbecue and Breaking Adams in 1990? How old was he when he did that?
I think he was 17.
Yeah, because that came out in 94. So he was around 16, 17 when he did that track. And, of course, he did MC Searches on Back to the Grill Again a couple years later. Of course, Halftime for the Zebrahead soundtrack in 92, that's when that came out. But Nas was just a generational talent. And when he got on that mic on Live at the Barbecue with that opening verse, I mean, that shit is just bananas. And you could see he was polished when he got on, and you just saw him get better and better as he went along. One thing I would tell young people today in music, when you're writing rhymes, it takes time to get good at it. You have to build, you have to be dedicated to it. This is not something that happens overnight. And this is something that is a process. And, you know, it's more rappers who don't make it than the ones that do. And I would tell anybody, especially a young person, if they have an opportunity for an education, always take the education. Now, it's different if you're trying to get to the pros in NBA, where we're thinking Adam Silver may, you know, pull back that rule where, you know, now where the 18-year-olds can get in the game, because then that's different because you're guaranteed a financial future, which I always say take the money because you can get education. But you see how these things work at certain levels. You go for the opportunity that is the most accessible and the most available that you know you're really guaranteed something with. And in life, that is a lot because there are not many guarantees in life.
I think I would venture in this case, especially with the chance to go to the NBA, I still think I always would prioritize learning. I feel like that's the key to everything.
Absolutely.
But even in that situation, I still would prioritize learning. The thing is, I think when a lot of people say, you know, would still go to education, people go, oh, so, you know, go to college and get an art degree or something, you know, and it's like, nah, they're not, you know, that also probably wouldn't be, you know, I feel like whatever you're doing, you have to have a passion for it in order for you to keep doing it.
Right.
And so if you want to go to college and become a doctor, and that's what you enjoy doing, and that's your passion, and that's what you should, you know. I feel like if ball is your passion, and that's what you're good at, and that's what you didn't do that. But I feel like, you know, prioritize the education and learn as much as you can when you can. Even if you're going straight to the NBA, you need to be coachable. You know what I mean? You need to be ready to listen to some of the big leaguers. You need to be ready to listen to some of the coaches and the older players that kind of got a feel of the game already. You know, you need to be ready to learn because a lot of it is people, oh, I'm going to the NBA. You can't tell me nothing. You know what I mean? Oh, I got signed. You can't tell me nothing. And it's like, well, there's plenty more for you to pick up that can add to what you got going on even. Let alone how you can help other people. So I definitely would say for prioritize the education just in your way.
going back to you and everything, you've been rapping for quite a while. Been interest from the majors and, you know, making that transition to sign into a major?
I mean, so for me, initially, that was kind of so at first, I never really started rapping in order to get rich or famous, you know. Again, it was just expression. Rap was kind of like my journal for a little while. But then after a little while, when people are like, yo, your rhymes is hot, yo, you should really, then I kind of got the bug to where, okay, maybe I could be rich and famous and, you know, be on the videos and all. Then reality kind of set in to where I realized, like, who I am. You know what I mean? Am I the type of person that wants to go to the mall and have 500 people come running after me trying to rip my clothes off? No, that's not really my bag. You know what I mean? The goal kind of switched, and it became more realistic as a first being sustainable, as in my music and my art and whatnot can pay for itself and become self-sustaining. And then to build a legacy that I can leave behind, I'm starting to, again, another transparency moment, I'm starting to have those realizations that time isn't forever. You know what I mean? Like when you're a kid and when you in your 20s and teens or whatever, you feel like you got all the time in the world. And I'm getting to that point where I'm realizing I don't have all the time in the world. I still have time, but not all the time in the world like you think when you're younger. So I've been leaning more towards that and kind of lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
Got distracted for a second.
It's okay.
But, yeah.
One thing about it, Fats, is this. When you look at a situation, this is one thing I tell young people today, and I've always adhered to this tenet of truth, which the wisdom is infinite. You only have a short time to be a child. You have your whole life to be an adult. The moral of that, don't rush to get old. Enjoy your youth and enjoy the lessons that come with being youth in terms of understanding what those, if you can make the mistakes early on that are not lethal and end your shit, you've learned a lesson that you can take with you. Because one thing about it is, the late great Richard Pryor said, you know, you don't get to be old being a fool. A lot of smart young men, they dead as a motherfucker, ain't they? You know?
It's true.
And
that's real.
And the fact is that we see a situation now where a lot of young people are trying to jump out there, trying to be grown, and don't really understand. And not to be condescending or arrogant in saying this, you have a lot of young artists coming into the business where they think they're accomplished because they got a YouTube video, that they have got 1 million views, that they're celebrity status. And the reality is, you know, what did Nas say on Classic? Well, you got a hit, that's nice. So let's see you do the same thing twice. And like you said, the humility of what you said is so refreshing, because a lot of people talk about they want fame and notoriety, but it's like the question is, are you mature enough to handle it in terms of what being a public figure entails? And we've seen a lot of people crash and burn under that spotlight who thought that they were ready for the celebrity life, because when you are in a celebrity life, you become a public figure. And when you become a public figure, your life is not your own. You're public property of everybody else's. Paparazzi, tabloids, you know, all types of people that want to pry into you, you know. You have very little private time. And I would ask anybody, is that something you're willing to sacrifice in terms of that peace of mind and tranquility, in terms of being able to move around and anonymously?
And I think that's a huge root of everybody says, I want to make it, or I want to blow. And it's a very broad statement, you know what I mean? Because
Right.
Generally, when people say, I want to make it, they mean they want 10 mil in the bank tomorrow, and they want 5,000 screaming fans every time they walk out the door. And it's like, it sounds phenomenal on paper. You know what I mean? Just the attention.
Right.
But you also got to think about what happens when you just want to go to Chick-fil-A and, oh, you got to go to the bathroom, and now somebody's in the bathroom stall trying to take pictures of you while you're sitting on the toilet, or like, you know, and it's like you said, can you handle that? You know what I mean? Is that what you really want? And so I think it comes back to framing. It's like you said, you got 1 million views on YouTube. You know what I mean? Well, if that's what you was going for, great. You know what I mean? That's fantastic. I also think about the back end of that, because that 1 million views can be monetized and you just make X amount of dollars, and then that can be, you know what I mean? But that's my framing. That's how I would think about it. Some people would think 1 million views, you know, I can share my stuff on YouTube and get 1 million views every time or whatever. I would think of it more from a, you know, as an artist for the sustainability. I could take that and turn it into something else. You know what I mean? Everybody don't think like that, because everybody has their own different framing of what making it and what success and what the milestones are. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. So I feel like people should realize, like, when you first start, you know what I mean? First of all, and this goes back to earlier when we were saying you have to have the passion for it, the two sides of the coin. Either you get into it, you blow the hell up, and you got all the fans in the world that you want, and you got all the money in the bank and the cars and the girls and the yachts, or you don't, and it's a long slog of you, you know, trying to get people to listen to your music, to see the vision, you putting in work hours in and don't know if you're going to make it, but you dedicate, you know what I mean? But either way, you have to have the passion, because after a while, the girls and the money and the cars ain't going to be enough. You know what I mean? Or it's not going to be enough. You're going to get 10 mil, and then you're going to want 20 mil, and then you're going to want 50 mil, and then you're going to want 100 mil. You know what I mean? And it's not going to stop. And eventually, if you're not into the music or whatever you're doing, you're going to be so tired of rapping. You're going to be so tired of being a doctor. You're going to be so tired of being a gymnast. You're going to burn out. And then it's going to show. People are going to see the crack in the facade because it's not, you know, it's not what you wanted. And then on the other side with the passion, if you don't blow, are you still going to want to do this a decade later and you ain't made your 10 mil? Are you still going to enjoy going to the studio? Is it still going to be fun to perform? Is it still going to be a good time for you to write rhymes and all that good stuff? So either way, you got to have a passion, because if you don't, you're just going to burn out, riches or not. So I feel like that's a great point there.
You got to make it like you got to be somewhat in it for the art. You know, everybody would love to get paid, compensated off what they love to do, but you got to have a love for the art. Way you do when these dudes come in strictly for the bag, it usually don't last long.
Yep.
And that's what people have to understand about it, because when you're in the game of it, that's why, you know, I asked you earlier what your passions outside of music are, because so many times people get so immersed in it that they define themselves by their success or failure in their profession, when the reality is that's only a small part of your life. Any artist that has children, I'm like, your children should be the priority. When you look at guys like Jay-Z, you know, Jay-Z is married to Beyonce and they have, you know, three children and their parents first. Now, granted, both of them have been hugely successful in their careers, but they also are in a place where you don't see them out there as much anymore in terms of, like, trying to be in this place and that place. Their financial security for each of them as an artist has been secured for years. You know, they secured that, like, many years ago. Like, going back 20 years, they were already financially straight. So the only thing to do now is, once they got married, was to raise their children, which they're doing. And they don't mind being out of the public eye. Aaron Magruder, the creator of the Boondocks, had a saying that I never forgot. If you want to stop being famous, just stop talking. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't do a certain thing crazy,
that's real.
Yeah.
That's honestly one of them, one of those new lessons that came about on my end. It was like, what's the reality? You know what I mean? Jump on social media, get your likes or don't, or whatever the case may be. But when you log off, what's the reality? You know what I mean? A lot of people is popping online and they log off and the people in their own family won't even talk to them. You know what I mean? Because they shiesty or something like that. And it's like, and then at the same time, it might be somebody that's popping and then they log off and they're not worried about that because the kids are fed and the wife is happy and, you know, so what's the reality? At some point, you gotta come outside of the image and, you know, even if you're not an artist or you're trying to be a public figure or whatever, even if you're not, just a regular person, at some point you got to come outside of what the average everyday person sees of you, you know, and think about, how do the people that spend the most time with you, how do they feel about you? The people that interact with you the most, your girlfriend, your mom, you know, your kids, your best friend, whoever it may be, how do they really feel about you? And how does that reflect? How are you reflecting yourself to them, the people that really know you. And I think a lot of people get caught up in the outward, the strangers, the random people, the I don't know, the person on the bus, and they often forget that the people that call them when they're sick, you know what I mean? they often forget that those are the people that really count, that really matter.
Yeah. That's something I think people really have to understand in terms of being grounded, because celebrity life is really nothing in terms of being successful when you don't really have people in your corner you can share it with. And this is where we see situations where a lot of times individuals who get around a lot of enablers, grifters, a lot of ancient people who basically are only around for the ride as long as the ride is going somewhere. But once all four tires go flat and there's no gas in the tank, they ain't got nothing to contribute to help you put gas in it, and they ain't got no air. You know, they got a whole bunch of helium to try to, you know, make themselves blow up. But at the end of the day, you know, you've really just had a lot of leeches around you that have, you know, used your gas and probably flattened your tires in the process of sabotaging your shit because they got jealous.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very important to know your circle and to who you have around. And I think sometimes people, once they start touching that level of fame, they, you know, like they say, you know, the circle changes, you know, the people you're around are different. Inevitably, you're going to meet different people because it's like what we do. And we've met a lot of celebrities along the way, in person and through this show. One thing I'm most proud of, we've stayed the same people the entire time. You know, we're not going to change. We'll give a celebrity, a legend, a great interview, just like we'll give an underground artist who's independent and just coming up a great interview. We show respect to everyone. But we also understand our place in terms of where we fit in and where we don't. I think that's where trash comes in for a lot of people. They try to fit themselves in a circle of celebrity that they don't really, really, really understand. In terms of, let's just say, some wild behaviors that a lot of people have when we're not seeing them on camera. It's okay to say no. It is okay to back away from situations that you know are not for you. That's called having boundaries. That is called understanding your limits. Like Rakim said, know the limits. Don't jump like Geronimo. And this is where we start seeing a lot of people who get into the crazy drug addictions or just really destructive habits because they're around people trying to fit in that, you know, they overindulge themselves. And too much of anything makes you an addict. And and the problem is, for some people, once they get that addiction to it, they never come back from it. You know, you don't define yourself by who you're around, because at the end, you are your own person, they are their person. And it really says a lot more when you are able to say that this ain't for me. And it's okay. It doesn't make you any lame. It doesn't make you a bad person. You just know where you fit in and where you don't. And that's okay.
And then right there, that's how you craft your life. That's really how you craft your life. I mean, you get to decide when something is for you and when it's not, and you get to be okay with it. And the people around you, like you said, whether they're okay with it or not, you know what I mean? As long as it's not anything detrimental to them, you just kind of got to live with it, and that's how you craft your life.
Yeah. And then people have to understand, too, everything isn't for social media. You know, you don't need to go out with a camera showing you shopping at the Gucci store or you at Ethan Company or, you know, Raffalo Jewelers or Jacob, and you're buying all this stuff. number one, it makes you a target when people know you have it. When you look at a lot of these artists, when you look at guys like Mos Def, when you look at Nas, when you look at, you know, Cormega.
When niggas want to be seen, though. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But those artists.
All that ego. It's you're gonna, that ego. They want to be seen because it's like the whole pay the fool mentality. They want to be seen. They want to be seen with the cars and all. They want to pull up. It's that machismo. It's that macho shit. You know what I'm saying? That's that gratification. Feeling like, yo, you got these people telling you the bad. He got this. He got that.
And deep down, honestly, I think we all share it in various ways and degrees. Then, you know, you want to be seen, you want to be heard. But I think it's just, you know, like y'all were saying earlier, it's a level of maturity that comes in to where you realize, you know, you want to be seen, but you want to be seen for the right thing and by the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like those rappers I named earlier, we know they're successful and they got money, but they don't flash it. You know, they just let their art and their personal lives stay separate.
Bro, in this aspect, I love J. Cole, man. Like, you know, he don't look like your typical rapper would look. You know what I mean? When he pulls up on the scene and his joggers and his, you know, New Balances or whatever he got on, you know what I mean? Like, he don't look like he got millions in the bank. But I like stuff like that because it breaks the mold. It lets people know that just because you've got it, you know, hell, who knows? Maybe the new style of being rich will be just chill, just some sweatpants and a T-shirt. You know what I mean? But either way, that's just, you know, you couldn't tell, and I really like that. I really enjoy that. I think it's cool when you got it, and people just know you got it. People just know you got it. I do not know J. Cole Network, but I know he has some money in the bank, you know, more than me for sure. So, you know, it's nice that he don't have to have 18 chains, and not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying, personally, I enjoy when your all-star rapper don't necessarily look the part. And it's like, huh? Like when Chance came out, he's not necessarily the next Jay-Z. But when Chance the Rapper came out, you know, he just looked like your regular, you know, backpack hip-hop dude, you know, and that, I like stuff like that.
Yeah, and one thing about it is just being responsible about things, because that goes into another aspect of when you get money, how you take care of it. I love sneakers. I love jewelry myself.
Right.
But I also, yeah, I have a serious, like, shoe fetish, like Jordan, Nike. I got a lot of it. You know, I have three main fetishes, you know, outside of women. You know, my record collection, jewelry, and shoes. But all of that, I pretty much, you know, women I deal with, I keep that, you know, pretty much off social media because I don't need everybody in my business on that. And then, like I said, in terms of having material possessions, you don't want everybody knowing what you have because that's how you become a target. Because once people see, it's not that it's absence of what's seen does not become presence in somebody's mind. They cannot formulate something of you if they have not seen you with it. When they see you with it, that's when people start drawing certain conclusions about things. This is why I tell people to be very, very careful what you put out there in terms of what you have. You know, because you got people that are envious and are just plain evil, and their thing is they're jealous of some of them, and their thing is they feel like they should have it, and, you know, they don't care if they got to take you out to get it. You know, and that's something you have to be mindful of. Not everybody's going to celebrate in your success, but they sure will celebrate in your downfall.
While you on that, I just want to say RIP, Young Dolph.
Yeah, that was, oh God. That's
that kind of a prime example of what you, yeah.
And Dolph talked about it.
And to be completely honest, I had just really started, you know, listening to Dolph tracks here and there, you know. So I'm not going to act like I'm a mega fan or anything like that, but he definitely had a lot of promise. Like, he was, you know, he was coming out the gate strong, so.
Yeah, Dolph was a family man. He was a good guy. I saw him perform years ago here in Virginia. This is when he dropped Preach. This is like when he was just really beginning to get out there. Really humble guy. And when he did an interview, he said, I don't really be around a lot of people. You know, he's like, I'm really to myself. Dolph understood how important it is to have your circle that you deal with. And he knew that. The problem was is that you got people, because the guy that they have, the feds have put out the warrant for his arrest, you see him in the pictures with Dolph. Now, on Off the Cuff, we're not going to speculate anything because we don't know for sure.
At all.
But
yeah,
we can kind of make a deduction that the dude probably knew him. Whatever was going on that led up to Dolph getting murdered, we don't know. We do know the feds have information because they wouldn't have put out that arrest warrant on dude if they didn't have something. But he was around Dolph. But you have to be careful because, you know, people in your circle will be plotting on your downfall. And, you know, Dolph had his issues, you know, with some artists. That just comes with the territory. But the reality is Dolph was not a guy who was just out there just doing stupid shit. You never really heard about it. I mean, you heard about Dolph doing fundraisers, you know. I mean, you heard about him, you know, helping out the community, you know, at Castilia, you know, where he's from in Memphis. You know, he was a decent guy.
Always gotta have
he
haters.
Was a really
good. Always gonna have people, regardless of what you do, you're gonna have people that's gonna be jealous of you. I mean, they even hated on Jesus. You know what I mean? And he tried
right.
to heal the world.
And that whole, you know, the whole Dolph tragedy is pretty much like a good summary of a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, you know, throughout the whole interview, about celebrity, about how everybody isn't your friend, about how you gotta, you know, look at the circle around you, because when they talk to the people that knew Dolph, you know, they have good things to say about him. They're not like, oh yeah, he was, you know, he owed me money, but, you know, they really, you know, so that's what really, now that he's gone, it doesn't matter what the YouTube comment says so much as what his mom has to say on the news or you know, what his childhood best friend that knew him from day one got to say type stuff. So a lot of that whole story is a good summary of many of the topics that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and but one thing about it, he had a vision in terms of what he did in reference to what he did independently with his music. You know, he was making those moves, and he built it from the ground up. And I think that's what a lot of artists have to understand. This takes time, you know, to really get there. And he was a self-made millionaire in terms of how he put his music out there. But when he started back in 2007, 2008, and he just kept moving with it. What do people from your experience that, what do people have to understand about the being an independent artist and the sacrifices you have to put in terms of really, you know, having to handle so many things and, you know, pushing for your career?
Yeah, first of all, you have to believe in yourself. You have to see the vision before everybody else does. I mean, a lot of the times, you're going to be the only one to see the vision. And then as you go along, you'll pick up other people that see the vision. But especially when you first starting, boy, you're going to be the only one to see what you see. So you're going to have to hold on to that. The second thing I would say is invest in yourself. And this this is a tree branch here. You know what I mean? So yes, that means financially. It means take the money and put it where you feel like you can get the bang for your buck to get where you're trying to go. Yes, number one. But it also means invest the time to learn, you know, the ins and outs of this thing, regardless of what. I mean, we're speaking specifically for artists, so I'm going to speak in that term, but regardless of anything, take the time to learn. Take the time to seek out the people that you want to work with, that you want to learn from. Take the time to replenish yourself. You know what I mean? It can't be all work and no play. So definitely make sure you take the time out to keep your mental health. you know, and I would really just say those two things will be, you know, those are huge. But then at the same time, do it your way. Do it your way would be another big one. I mean, you know, what does making it mean to you? Not what does it mean. What does it mean to you? What would make you, what would put you in a position to not only be happy and comfortable, but to also be able to help the people that gave a damn about you when nobody else did to be happy and comfortable along with you? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like those three things are big. You definitely got to put in the time, the effort, the energy, the money. I mean, even, you know, $5 a day, you know what I mean? Like, it's, everybody ain't got it. Most of us is working 9-to-5 jobs, trying to pay bills and put gas in the car. But if you got $20, you know, that you was just going to spend on Bud anyway, hell, you know, get the studio time or pay the graphic designer or, you know, something that'll get you one step closer. You know what I mean? Just something. if you're not putting up no kind of money, yeah, you can get some freebies. Yeah, you can get some handouts. Yeah, some people will look out, especially if you got talent, if you got skills. But eventually somebody gonna be like, well, look, I was watching an interview on Instagram. Master P was on there, and he was saying he paid Michael Jackson lawyers $25,000 for knowledge, so they could sit down and he could learn some things that he didn't know. And, you know, that's what it, at some point it's going to come to that. So just be ready to put in for yourself. Sometimes it's going to be free. Sometimes you can watch YouTube videos and learn something. Sometimes you can go to the library. Sometimes you meet somebody and network. That's another big one, network. The network will get you farther than the money even will, because, you know, people like to work with people they like to work with.
right.
You know what I mean? If you enjoy the creative process, like, shout out to my man, the chef. He's been producing for me for well over a year now, I believe, and we just enjoy working with each other. You know what I mean? And it's, so that really, it's not even a process. I just enjoy, you know, going to his studio. He got the beats, I got the lyrics. It's some real hip hop stuff. You know what I mean? It's like your classic hip hop setup. Got the mic right here. Not a care in the world. Break out the notebook. I still write with notebooks and pen, by the way. So,
but, it's all, you know, good.
Break
it's
out
good.
The notebook. Right. So, you know, network is another big one. I mean, it's a lot of them, but a lot of it really comes down to just putting in the time and putting in the effort and really caring about it. You know what I mean? If you just try. Just do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what you said about Master P, you know, because Michael's business acumen, rest in peace, Michael Jackson was a business genius in terms of how he worked a lot of that stuff. I mean, basically owning 50% of Sony's publishing, you know, because he owned half of the songs in that label's catalog. I mean, and then you look at it, Master P had $25,000 that he knew was going to yield a lot of returns in terms of infinite knowledge sitting down with Mike. So, I mean, if anything, that's a one-on-one business seminar, which Mike has the wisdom, he has the money, Mike gets paid for his wisdom. It's fair exchange. Fair exchange is not robbery.
And the spin to it was, he to continue in that interview, he had said that he that wound up helping him get one of the deals that he was working on at the time. I don't want to misquote. But he also said that the lawyer was saying something along the lines of he can help with that deal, but it's going to be another 200. You know what I mean? And you know, it. I hate the whole saying it take money to make money because it's such a cliche, but it's so honest. It's so real.
It is. It is.
Same time, it take time to make time. That may not make as much sense, but it still rings somewhat true. You have to make the time, and which means you have to take the time out in order to do something, to learn something, to spend time with someone, to, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know.
Yeah. And it is, and the fact is, when you got the money to do it, I tell anybody, make sure that money is well placed in an aspect of where it really is going to benefit you. And I think that's where some artists, you know, I would tell anybody, you know, before you buy that chain, get yourself a nice house, you know, and you don't try to get the biggest house. If anything, you always save. I remember Rick Ross in his book when he got his deal, Hurricanes, great book for those that have not read it.
I was thinking about checking that out, actually. I was looking at it online, and I was like, because I wanted to read the Perfect Day to Boss Up.
Perfect Day to Boss Up. I got both of them.
Yeah, I want to read them. Okay.
Yeah, he did it with Neil Martinez Belkin. Yeah, Neil Martinez Belkin was the is his co-author, and it, and both of those books were tremendous. Shout out to the whole MMG crew, Slab, you know, Jeter K, John Austin, Trop Da Vinci. It's Nick Garcia, you know, just the whole crew. And Ross wrote in his book when he got his deal with Def Jam, you know, after he closed the deal and he got his money, he said he didn't spend a penny of it. You know, he just went on the road and just did his shows, and he just basically, you know, was saving his show money. And his first big purchase was a house. But, you know, his thing was, I got my foot in the door with a deal, but I didn't know what was going to happen. So I knew I had to make the most of this. And that didn't mean, that meant I didn't need to blow all my money in terms of my advance. And look where he is now.
And that's smart, because that's one of the first things that, you know, you kind of pick up knowledge-wise as an artist, that advance is not just free money that they giving you to blow, and they're like, they want that money back. You know what I mean? That's an investment. They expect the ROI. So,
return on investment, exactly.
So that was smart. Yeah, so that was smart that he did it that way.
Yeah. But he worked, and he went. I'm telling you, Fats, when you watch the when you read the book, you're gonna be Hurricanes is his life story. The Perfect Day to Boss Up is his strategy book on just conducting business and how you look for opportunities and how you just work with what you have, and you just go out and do it. But Hurricanes is an excellent read in terms of him telling his whole life story, from when he was a child to, at that period, 3-4 years ago when the book was released. So it talks about everything in his life, the trial, for that whole thing with the dude that had a party at his house and, all that, and then a couple of the shootouts. He talks about all of it.
Awesome.
But it's a great read. But one thing about it is, he talked about how long it took him, because it took Ross a little over 10 years to really get to where he was. you know, in terms of when Port of Miami came out in 2006, Ross had been doing, you know, the music thing since like 1996, you know, so
yeah.
Even a little earlier than that in terms of, you know, just because he had been writing ever since he was a child, you know, but it took him 10 years to really, 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 you know, through the ups and downs, bad record deals, you know, not getting the money, almost getting killed in an accident, he talked about, this is the humility in terms of how transparent he was. He talked about back in the day when he was, you know, when he went under the name Teflon Don, you know, how back in the day you could get him for like $250 for a show. You know, so he tells the whole story of how far he came. And, you know, I always respect hard work. On this show, King and myself, we have always respected those that have been able to do it. I mean, we look at guys like Jeezy, you know, shout out to him, DJ Ace, you know, the whole CTE, Boo Rossini, Snoop 11, you know, Jeezy has transitioned from the trap to music and now being a, you know, doing his joint, Worth a Conversation, basically having his own television show. You know, so it's about growth. That's the main thing.
Okay, I'm back on board.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Hey, I'm trying to make sure everything is good with you. Still with us, bro?
Yeah, it had blanked out, and I jumped right back in while I was still talking. It was like a second.
It's all good. It's all good. But yeah, but to see a lot of those guys who are making that transition, I mean, when you look at Nas, what he did with that ring technology some years back when he was one of the early investors in it, and he made that $40 million off of it. You know, and now Nas...
You know, I love...
Go ahead.
I love that black people are having these conversations about stocks, crypto. I mean, you know, even a decade ago, you might be a little more hard-pressed than you are today to hear, you know, just the average black person having these conversations. But it's, I mean, it's nice to just be in the grocery store and the guy on the next aisle over is, you know, talking to somebody about the stocks he's looking at or that he just bought or something. Like, it's, I like this. This is progression. This is growth. Like you were saying, growth. This is growth. So, I just wanted to interject that.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's where some black people have to really understand. There's more to it. You know, once you get your foot in the door at a certain vocation, there's nothing wrong with expansion to do something else. You know, matter of fact, this day and time, in terms of how finances can change, you know, how things can happen, you got to have a lot of hustles. And it's important to understand, you know, how important it is to be able to have many hustles. And the thing is, have something that is actually going to really, really be practical and not some fly-by-night, get-rich-quick scheme that basically you're just going to wind up being on the bottom end of a pyramid. There's no substitute for hard work and calculated moves,
right.
You got to make sure that on your, you know, that you're knowing what you're doing.
Strategy plays a big part in planning, and but also I also want to add into that hobbies are okay. Like, you don't have to be, you know, cornering the market and making all the money on the paintings that you just like to do in your garage sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we all have our hustles and our ventures and our, you know, investments and all that. But at the same time, it's okay to just do something because you enjoy doing it. I think a lot of people forget that, especially when it comes to hip-hop. I think everybody feels like if you want to you want to be a rapper, you got to be a millionaire. And some people out there, they just want to rap. You know what I mean? They don't have any intention on being anything or doing anything with it. And they just want to freestyle at parties. And that's okay. You know what I mean? So along with having a strategy and a plan, also be okay with just having some hobbies that you like to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to have yourself balanced, you know. That's the most important thing. You got to be balanced, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, it's just a job for what you do with the music. And, you know, you don't want to be consumed by it, because once you get consumed with it, it can become too much of a burden. I think that's where some people, like I said, the burnout comes because, you know, it just becomes very difficult to maintain it. You've got to know when to unplug from it. And if you got to take time off, take time off. It's okay.
I apologize, guys. What I missed out on?
It's okay. We're just talking about, you know, just, you know, life in terms of just how you and just the patience. We talked about Ross's book and how, you know, he just talked about how the, you know, he had to just work to get to where he was, and it just took time.
Hey, I had a question I want to shoot to him for a minute. Now, you did one of the songs we played was Love Affair. Dope joint, man. I like those type of hip-hop songs that talks about relationships in a very mature but fly fashion. What was it like working with Ari Quinn? Because she's dope.
Oh, yeah, she is dope. And you know what? As much personality, I mean, as you see, like, in the videos and when she does interviews and stuff, she was like that in real life. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, when we did the track more remotely where we went through email. But, I mean, she was easy to work with. You know, we got it done pretty quick. I mean, it was a dope experience. But then when we got up to shoot the video, it was cold and it was nighttime, but she was a real good sport. She was energetic and bubbly, and she did her parts. And I mean, she's just a real good personality and a real good person. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So what you see in the videos, like, that's not fake. She really got that energy. You know what I mean?
That's dope. That's dope. When you shoot videos, how do you figure out the concept for how you want to do it?
So that one, a lot of the times it kind of, so I believe in letting the team play their role, play their position. You know what I mean? So I make the music, and then when I go to a videographer, first of all, there's certain videographers that I know are strong in certain areas. Like, if I just want to hype, you know, just me rapping and, you know, some dope effects and some cool lighting, like, I know who to call. At the same time, if I want more like a story vibe, or if I want something to be more low key, you know, or more like a movie, then there's other people that I would call. For the Love Affair of Don Julio, I actually worked with JT Visuals. And I had actually worked with her before, actually, on a couple other videos by some of my homies. That also rap. And I hit her up because, you know, I seen some of her stuff, and she, you know, it looked a little more cinematic to where we could tell a story with the video. And so it's a whole process. But after that, I kind of let the director direct, you know what I mean? Like, I still have my pointers. I'll come in and I'll say, okay, this is the vision. Like, this is with Love Affair, Don Julio. I was like, I wanted to tell a breakup story. You know what I mean? So that's like the overarching. That's how I would start and then be like, okay, so I want maybe like three scenes, and I want a flashback scene, and then we need like a rapping scene. And then from there, you just kind of hash it out. You kind of detail it a little bit more. But honestly, I let the director, I get him like the overarching vision and then some of the specifics here and there. And then I let them kind of come up with how, because they know what it's going to look like on the other side of the camera, and they know what it's going to look like when they get ready to edit it. So we take my vision, we add in their suggestions from a cinematic point of view or from a videographer point of view, and then we kind of mesh that and come together. And, I mean, for me, it works. Speaking of music videos, I got a new one coming out. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking
of music videos, I got one coming out January the 28th for my song One Night in Baton Rouge featuring Jay Hood. And that's going to be on imthefatboy.com, actually my website. So, yeah, January 28th. Just a little plug right there. But and that one's going to be actually a little more cinematic like we're talking about. I got the song playing, and actually my role in the video is very minimal. Actually, this is a good example. Visual Dynasty Productions, I've actually worked with them a few times. They did the Toast video. They did the Taste video. Both of those are on thefatboy.com. And for this one, I wanted to do more like a silent movie with the track playing, you know, kind of as more as a soundtrack. Like the song is playing, but it's like you watching a movie. And it came out really good. I gave them the vision of what I wanted it to be about, and I don't want to give too much away. And honestly, I'm a little bit of a blabbermouth, so I don't want to like give you a description of what the vision was and then give away some of the video. But yeah, it came out good. It'll be dropping on the 28th, 8 p.m. And I'm excited. I've seen it. I'm excited. Shout out to V Monique. Shout out to Raleigh Boy. Shout out to Jermana. Shout out to, of course, Visual Dynasty. Shout out to the chef. He produced the joint. You know, I just said, oh, and definitely shout out to Jay Hood, ODG, D Block. I'm looking forward to this one.
That's dope. As you go on in your career, who would you love to work with along, as you keep going?
I want to work with Juvenile. That would be dope. He's definitely, for me, he's in my top five as well, but it's off of consistency. Cause honestly, I probably first heard Juvenile. It was maybe 96 the first time I heard a Juvenile song. And
was
it's 2021. Huh?
Was that Bounce of the Juvenile you first heard or?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Oh, was that song Bounce for the Juvenile that you first heard with him?
Oh, nah, the first song I heard with Juvenile probably would have been, oh boy, he put me on the spot with that one. I got to go through my whole Juvie catalog in my head back through time. Because I was just about to say, if I search Juvenile right now in 2021, he got some dope shit because I still listen to Juvenile. So I got to, the first Juvenile track I heard, it definitely wasn't Back That Ass Up. It was before that. Probably first time I heard Juvenile was on a Hot Boys CD, to be honest with you. Because I really was into the Hot Boys, so Guerrilla Warfare or might have been a Big Timeless joint. I used to listen to Cash Money hard back in the day. So this is hard. But ever since then, he's been in my top five. Because even now, he's still consistent. He still consistently has dope tracks. To me, that's my personal opinion. And then Weird Al, for me, that would be for the novelty. I wouldn't even want, you know, necessarily be like, yeah, I want to get Weird Al fans to like this track. I would just, if I recorded a song with Weird Al and nobody heard it but me, and the people that I was like, yo, I did a song with Weird Al, I'd be okay with that. I just want to do it. You know what I mean? Just because of the influence. And those two are probably the biggest two. You know what I mean? Those are the two I would really think about when I think of who I would want to do a track with the most right now.
Definitely. As we come to a close of this interview, this has been incredible. This has been inspirational. We've enjoyed this, Fats. Thank you so much for taking your time to join us.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I had just as much fun.
Yeah. Are there any shout-outs you'd like to give anybody before we sign off for tonight?
Yeah, definitely. One more time, I want to shout-out the Chef. We actually got a whole album in the works that's coming later on this year to cook up. I definitely want to shout-out my tribe. I'm going to just say my tribe because, you know, it's a few people. And you always wind up leaving somebody out, and then I get in trouble later on, and I'm getting DMs with somebody like, you forgot to shout me out. So I'm going to say my tribe and everybody that know who that is, you know who you are because I have told you myself. You know what I mean? I definitely want to shout out everybody that's listening, streaming, watching, you know, coming to the shows, whatever. Thank you. Whatever support you are providing, even if it's just thoughts and prayers from a distance, I appreciate you. I want to thank y'all for having me on the show. I want to shout out the Visual Dynasty because the new music video is coming out January 28th, 2022. It's going to be my first release of the year, One Night in Baton Rouge. Who else off the top of my head? And I don't want to leave nobody out. I'm going to cut it off there before I put my foot in my mouth or something like that. So
it's all good. You're welcome back.
Shout out to everybody involved.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Look, goes without saying, you're welcome back anytime. Thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, I guess, you know, as we come up on the 11 o'clock hour, we're about to sign off. So, you know, so us on Off the Cuff Radio, for all our listeners out there, we thank you so much for tuning in with us. And we'll be back, same bat time, same bat channel next week, and maybe sooner than that. All righty. God bless. We love y'all. Peace and blessings and good night. We are out.